Okay, so imagine a nation under siege. Supplies are low, tempers are high, and instead of banding together, people turn on each other. One group pressures for war, another group wants peace. The wealthy are living in comfort, and others are starving, and the leaders are powerless, paralyzed. Last year, we studied Jewish life pre-siege in Yerushalayim. In Chazal's description of the Kamsa Bar Kamsa story, we took a deep dive in uncovering a society with different societal cliques whose members hated each other, who had no qualms about publicly humiliating each other without any pushback from its moral leaders. And this year, what I want to do is I want to study how that society functions under a siege. So we're going to explore three stories from the Gemara that show how internal fragmentation led to our greatest national tragedy and how it also points us to the seeds of redemption. So in doing so, I want to read three stories from the Gemara. And in these three stories, we're going to study four paths, four reactions by Jews in a besieged city. And hopefully this will be interactive. The first story, right? We know many of these stories. The first story is, we'll just read it first and we'll analyze it. It's in Gittin, Daf Nun Vav Med Aleph. It's right after the Nero story that I spoke about yesterday. So, Havu Ba Hanu Tla Satira. There are three wealthy people. Nakdimon Ben Gurion, Ben Kalba Savua, Ben Kititzitz HaKesef. So three different individuals. Nakdimon Ben Gurion, why is he called Nakdimon Ben Gurion? Shenokdalo Chama, that the sun shined on his behalf. It should be more. Yeah, okay. Okay, the different explanation. This was a Sephardic translation. They could be a different translation. So it's still on his behalf. Ben Kaba Savua, why is it called Ben Kaba Savua? Shekola Nichla Savesha Kishu Raiv, Kikalev, anyone who goes into his house hungry like a dog, Yotzi Kishu Savea. He leaves when he's satiated. Ben Tzitzis HaKeses. Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, different opinions as to why he's called Ben Tzitzis HaKeses. Shehoisa Tzitziso Nigreris Abay Ksasos. He is so wealthy that his tzitzis dragged along blankets, you know, meaning he would not walk on the street with feet on the ground. There always be people in front of him, you know, with like, so he wouldn't have to walk with his feet on the ground, always covering the streets before him. They put blankets beneath him. Igadamri Shehoisa Kisoso Mutelis Ben Doli Romi, that his Kisiso, his seat, was found among the nobles of Rome, meaning he was chashuv among the people of the city of Rome. Okay, so you have these three people. Now, Chad Amar Lahu, Ana Zayne Lahu Bechite. Sorry, one of them said, "I will satiate people with wheat and barley." V'Chad Amar Lahu Bechdechamu Uvidemilcha. One say, "I'm going to supply them with wine and salt." V'Chad Amar Lohem Biditzivi. And once I'm going to supply them with wood, and the rabbis are happy with the people who supply them with wood. Okay. So, and then the Gemara continues, and he says that Hava Lahun, I'm skipping a few lines, Hava, the sort of the bottom of this paragraph here, Hava Lahun Lamezan Eshim Echad Shasa. They had enough food to last a siege, to withstand the siege for 21 years. Now, do sieges last 21 years? No. So, like, what was the plan here? To ask the Romans, what? To wait him out. So what were they like? There were different groups there, right? So where did these people fit in? Were they on the
non-fight back side?
So they were among, right? So either they're going to outlast the Romans, or maybe what else?
Go to war.
So you think that they might go?
No, they're not.
They're not going to go out. Right, I'm saying. So these people are either going to outlast the Romans, or maybe what else might they do? Now, there's who else was a moderate in this story? I mean, later on, you know, who else is a moderate? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And what does he try to do? He tried to negotiate. So now so these people are either people who are I'm just trying to outlast the Romans, okay? Because maybe there's a lot of upheaval going on in Rome, and maybe they'll have to go back and just maybe they'll outlast. So maybe they can, maybe those they'll sue for some kind of peace, some kind of deal.
Or both,
right? I come for both, right? Then Rome itself is going through a lot going on in Rome, because right in the middle of the story, we know when Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai goes to Vespasian, he says, "By the way, they made you king." Like, there's a lot of upheaval going on. So they're saying again, either these are people who want to sue for peace, or they say, like, well, "Let's wait them out." Meanwhile, Havaluhu Hanu Biryone. So there were these zealots. Amruluhu Rabbanan, the rabbi said to them, Nepuk v'navik shlama, let's make peace with them. So again, were the three rich people, were they connected with these, were they the backers of these three, of the rabbis? Maybe. In any case, lo shavkinu. So the zealots did not want to make peace. Amruluhu, Nepuk v'navik krava badayu. So they said, let's make war with them. Amrulei Rabbanan, lo mistaya milsa, you're not going to be successful. So kamu kalanhu lahanhu amavre dechite v'sharei v'have kafna. So then these zealots arose and they burnt down the storehouses of the wheat and barley, and there was a then there was this general famine. So that's sort of the first story. So let's think about this. Let's think about the story for a bit, right? So you have three wealthy families who have 21 years of supplies that could sustain the people during the siege. The sages basically tell the Biryonim that maybe there'll be a diplomatic solution, maybe a natural resolution. The Biryonim don't want to compromise, so they destroy their own food. So this story represents idealism gone wrong. This is, if you connect this to the Kamsa Bar Kamsa story, so the Kamsa Bar Kamsa story is about, you know, it's a simple story. I mean, it's not a nice story. It's about someone embarrasses someone. It's about people who don't want to get along with each other. Okay, someone's embarrassed. She's thrown out of a party. So what does this story tell you? This is like the next step, right? In other words, this story is the truth is, the Gemara probably could have taken an even harsher story, because I'm sure, you know, there are stories of fighting and killing. So maybe The Gemara doesn't want to go that far in saying Jews killed Jews, which probably did happen during the siege, during this time. There was a civil war going on inside. People were killing each other. So they don't want to say that. Like, we don't want to say that we're killing each other, but it's kind of telling you how basically, when you start and you have a Kamsa Bar Kamsa situation, different groups, it doesn't end with humiliation. It basically ends with you're viewing the moderates as the enemy, leading to destruction of property, which brings about famine and loss of life. And the goal, what's the goal of the famine? What's the goal of the famine? What's the goal of the famine?
Coerce the people into their way of doing
things. Right. So to coerce the people to unite and fight the Romans. And by the way, is that what resulted? So they thought that we would destroy all the storehouses. Now we're going to unite. Now we're going to wage war. It's not what happened. What?
But the opposite could happen. Just call them to surrender. That's it.
Right. So they felt. So it's interesting. So they felt that we're not, that if they starve the people, then they're gonna want to run out. So what we're saying is their goal didn't work, because it actually led to more disunity. So this story shows that the internal crisis in Yerushalayim is no less severe than the external one, right? The city is effectively under siege from both the outside and the inside. The famine advances the war, which leads to the destruction of the Mikdash and the devastation of Yerushalayim, right? And so, why are we talking about these three wealthy people? What's the relevance of these three wealthy people? So these three wealthy people. Look at source number two, the Marsha. Look at source number two. So we have the story of these three. These are good guys. These are tzaddikim, or they seem to be very good people, right? And the Gemara says, why is he called, Evan, you were saying, why is he called Nakdimon? Because the son stopped on his behalf, or it's Sean on his behalf. And they're mentioning here that we have tzaddikim here. We have individuals, and we also have Ben Tzitzis. Ben Tzitzis He was either really, really wealthy, or what else? What was the second opinion? What was the second opinion again? What was the second opinion of who Ben Tzitzis was?
Important.
He's important. How important was he? And there's what he was.
He was so long.
No. Why did Tzitzis was so long? But what, he was important in what way?
He had connections.
He had connections. So here was someone who could negotiate with the Romans. And maybe the story is again telling us, so the Marsha is telling us, the Marsha points out, is he's saying that you had these wonderful people who were wealthy people, who were good people, and if not for the Bar Yonim, v'hem paritzi Yisroel, sh'hem b'hem, k'mefores b'yosifun, v'hem mitoch sinosim zed zed, because of their hatred, gormu lehen achurban, v'agolus, the churban was caused, and the exile, shol yirot simli kon l'romim. It led to that. So in other words, I think the first story of the siege is a story that's telling us that it's the next step of the Kamsa Bar Kamsa Sinas Chinam. That basically, if because of Sinas Chinam, the Biryonim are unwilling to think that a different path could be correct. One reaction, this is one reaction to Jews in a besieged city. One reaction is extremism, ideological purity, and hatred of anyone who disagrees with you, and destruction of anything that blocks your path, even if by doing so, you are destroying your own society. Right? That is one reaction to the story. And now we're going to read about a different reaction. And like it's. I mean, on the one hand, it doesn't seem as worse, but it's another reaction. This is a story of Marta Bas Baitus. Okay? The story continues. So you got these zealots who are unwilling to compromise. This hatred is sort of blinding them to seeing anything differently. And then you have this woman, Marta Bas Baitus. So I read, so we know this. So what's the story? What's the story of Marta Bas Baitus on the outside? And what's the story?
She's a very wealthy woman.
She's a very wealthy woman. And what happens? Right? So it says, she's Atir to Yerushalayim Hava. She's really wealthy. So you have these three guys who are really wealthy, and she's got her who's really wealthy. So Shadrasa Lishluche Va'amrole. So she sends her messenger and says to him, Zil Isa Li Smida, go bring me fine flour. So I want to read this, and then I want you to ask me what you think the message, or what some of the message the Chazal want to convey to us through the story. So she sends her messenger and he says, bring me flour. Adazal Izdaban. So he goes to buy. Asa Amarla, he comes back to, he says, Smida Leka Chiyurta Ika. No, we don't have fine flour. There's only, what's Chiyurta? Regular flour. Okay. So Amalei says, fine. Okay, Zil, I think, bring that to me. Adazli's Daben. So he goes, he comes back, and he goes to buy. I said, Amalei comes back to you. He says, No, we don't have regular flour. We only have coarse flour. So Amalei says to him, okay, Zil, I said, bring it to me. You would think that this messenger would get the point, right? Like you wonder, like why is the messenger not getting the message by the third time that if you don't have the good flour, then you should at least get what's...
Maybe it's her nature, yeah, that she's a real stickler to follow exactly my orders.
Okay. So, and that she... And
she was expecting the best, but there isn't anything left.
In other words, she is totally... What is she... She is someone who is... Like, what? Okay, so either the messenger is an idiot...
She had to ask the question in the first place. You're in the middle of a famine and a siege.
Right.
She says, go buy me the five
right.
Hours. Like,
get me something to eat. So what is she?
She's a princess.
Right. So someone said, so I saw that someone gave a good analogy. She is the one who's got this really beautiful penthouse on the Titanic when it's about to crash. And she is someone who is like totally disconnected from reality. So again, either the messenger's an idiot, or maybe like say he has to follow exactly what she said, because she is totally disconnected from reality, right? And then finally he says, there's no gushka leika, kimcha desharika, there's barley flour. Amale, zil isli, bring to me, right? She says...
She was not outside. Right. So,
right, she's totally... Right, so you have these biryonim, and then you have this princess, you have these three wealthy guys who like know what's going on, they're gonna support everyone, and you have her, and she is, again, So you could talk about her. She's totally disengaged, totally disconnected. And she said, "Ad azal izaben." So she said, "You know what? I'm going to go out. I'm going to find something to eat." So have a shlifa masana. So she took off her shoes. Amra, I'm sorry. She said, "I think it's missing some lines here." So she said, I think we're missing them. Ad al izaban. Okay. When he went out, so the barley flour was also sold. So have a shlifa masana. She took off her shoes. She said, "Amra epak va'aze imish kachas bidil mecha. I'm going to go see if there's something to eat." Esev la parta be kara umesa. So she stepped in some dung, which sucked her foot, and she was overcome by disgust, and she died. Koriela Ryochan ben Zakkai. Rav Yochan ben Zakkai, when he thought about her, he connected her to the following pasuk. Harakabacha vaha nugaba asher lo nitzak hafragla. The tender and delicate woman among you who would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground. Okay. So he connects that to that. Ikadami, there are those who say, grow gross de Rav Tzadok achla. She ate the fig of Rabbi Tzadok. Ve'it nasi umesa. And she became disgusted and she died. De Rav Tzadok yasiv arba'in shnin betanisa delo lech Rav Yerushalayim. Rav Tzadok sat for 40 years in fasting so that Yerushalayim should not be destroyed. Ki hava ochel midi, when he would eat something, hava mitchaze me'avrai. You can sort of see it going down his throat. He was such a skeletal individual that you can see the fig going down his throat from the inside. V'chi hava bari, and when he would be healthier, Maisela grogros meit mihavishadi lahu, and he would suck out the liquid of the fig and he would throw the rest away. Okay, and apparently what happened? So Marta must have found the leftover fig of Rabbi Tzadok, and she died. Of course. So what's the message here? So let me finish the story and I want to get your reactions here. Kiava kanicha nafsha. So when she dies, she's about to die. Afiti lechol dava kafla shadisa b'shuka. She then takes all of her gold and silver and throws it out to the marketplace. Amra hay lemei my badli. She said, "Why do I need this?" Okay, quoting a pasuk Yecheskel, they're throwing out their money. So what is this? What does the story suggest to you? Reactions. What does the story suggest to you? Why do you think Chazal is telling us the story? Yeah, thoughts.
Presumably, you had people who were totally detached from the common folk. She's
right.
Representative of that.
Right. So she. So, right, so it's an interesting question. Is the foil between her and the three men, or the foil seems to be, maybe the debate, maybe there are two different opinions on how she dies, right? Is she the foil of the three wealthy men? That might be the first opinion. And maybe the second opinion is her foil is Rabbi Tzadok. She, again, you can look at the story and you could say this is a story of how things just descended so quickly, like how devastating life was for the Jewish people. You can look at this and saying, you know, because we see how destructive the Baryonim were and what they did, and things went down fast so quickly, right? You could look at Marta ben Baitus, Bas Baitus, and by the way, you know who she was. We have other stories about her. I brought her in source 4.
Her name also is not a straightforward thing. Marta's Maraj, she's a bitter word.
Right.
Baitos, who's Baitos also, exactly.
Right. Is she Baitos, right. Marta is interesting, right. Her name was Miriam, but maybe she was, that might have been her Roman name, that she was more connected with the Romans.
An elegant lady.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
And she, look, source 4 tells us that she gave King Yanai money so that he would appoint, I'm not sure if the timing works out, but the timing, yeah, the timing doesn't work out. But the story is told of a story on how she bribed someone so that Yeshua ben Gamla would become the Kohen Gadol, the high priest. So she buys the Kohen Gadol for her husband. Maybe then, once you read that, maybe the story criticizes the Kohen family, the elites who were so detached from the people. She is someone, again, you have the Biryonim, the destructive people, ideological purity. Again, you have different types of people who are their own different cliques. So some of them are like, they hate anyone who is different than them. Yeah, Marta Basbaitus is a different type of person. She just, I don't deal with these people. She's totally detached from these people. And to such an extent that she is completely unaware of the plight of the poor. Right? You have here, the Ion Yaakov wants to say in source 5 that that Marta Basbaita, Tirta Yerushalayim Havya, she was a wealthy person in Yerushalayim. Nira, Dinakot Hai Maisa, it seems that we have this, why do we have this story, Hacha? Why do we have this story right here? Vikamar, Tirta Yerushalayim, and why is it mentioned she was a wealthy of Yerushalayim? The Haroshi, Haisa Gedola Bashirus, Yoser Mikolanchi Yerushalayim. She was wealthier than the other three guys. I think there's another one. Where's the other? Yeah, the top of there? Okay. That she was wealthier than all the other men of Yerushalayim. She wasn't a Baal Tzedakah. She wasn't like these three other men. That behold, these three wealthy people, they were willing to feed, to nourish the poor people of their city. Zman Rav, a long time. She was not that generous. The kach nensha, therefore she was punished. V'chazi ma'osalad, see what happened to her. Shekasu zava, shedisa b'shuko b'esa b'bisa shaltzar. She threw her money. Her money is worthless. Her money is worthless. She threw it all away, and she died in a death of pain. So again, maybe she's the opposite of the three wealthy men. Some of Farshim say that. She only sees what's in front of her. Her punishment conveys that her ignorance of suffering is morally equivalent to causing the suffering. Right? She represents the group of people who are so self-absorbed, who do not engage with those outside their circles. They're not biryonim who are being destructive, but they are recklessly indifferent. And the first time that she confronts reality, what happens? She dies. She is so disconnected that the first time that she confronts, at least according to the first opinion, she's so disconnected, the first time she confronts reality, she steps in dung and then she dies. See, division can manifest as violent opposition or as passive ignorance. And both destroy society. And as I mentioned, there are two different versions of her punishment. The first version tells a story of how, when she confronts reality, she cannot handle reality. She is so disconnected from reality that she cannot exist when confronting it. The second version, as mentioned, contrasts her with Rabbi Tzadok. And maybe they were the exact opposites. And we're going to return to this contrast later, as we'll see, because this is one of the requests of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Yeah. Right.
That couldn't it just be that her focus was she was amassing gold and silver, as opposed to the others who had done flour or wood. She was amassing something that really has no value outside of just being elegant or something. And her focus was, oh, okay. And obviously she didn't have stores of flour because she had to send her guy out, her agent, to go out and get flour. So she had amassed this thing that really is worthless in times of need.
She had things that are not necessities, but just extravagant.
She had nothing of real value when things are really
The basis.
Great.
I like that.
And then she said, okay, go out and get it. And each time, she, even someone who had so much money, she was not able to get what she needed. And whether it resorted to that, the fact that she couldn't get flour, or it resorted to that she she really couldn't get anything, that she even had to eat a leftover fig.
Right.
And then she was so disgusted that she had...
Right. You know, if she would have the basic necessities, she could have been survived herself. Interesting.
Right, but it's even that possible, it says that like, you cast the silver, and that she had all these things that were just worthless.
Right.
That she had...
I like that. Okay, very good.
Doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, very good. I like that. Good. So we're going to run through the third story. So we have two reactions. We have both representing division, the Biryonim and Marta Bas Paitus. And now we're going to have the final story, and we'll see two other reactions. I'm going to run through, there's a lot of pieces to this, but I want to make one point, so we're going to run through the story. Abba Sikra, Reish Biryonim, Yerushalayim, Bar Achse, the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Hava. So Abba Sikra was the head of the Biryonim. He was the nephew of Yochanan ben Zakkai. So they were related. Shalach le, ta bitzita legabai, come, meet me in private. Asa barle, he came, he said to him, I'm Eibas Avitza Hachi, what are you going to do this? Vikat lisa le, lama makadva, you're killing the whole world with the whole city, killing everyone with the famine. Amale ma'avid, so Abba Sikra said, what can I do now? Diyamudulahu bidi katluli, he even realized it was too much, but he can't control the mob anymore. Amale, So he says, let's try to do something, right? So we can maybe save something. And the Gemara discusses his old death trick, right? He does a death trick. He pretends that he's dead, and they try to poke him, and they get him out of Yerushalayim. So if you turn the page, here. Kimata lahasam, the next page. There's a break. Kimata lahasam. So they sneak Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai outside the city. Omar, he says, Shlomo lech malka, Shlomo lech malka. He said, peace to you, king, peace to you, king. Amarle, so Vespasian, he's the leader. Michayav to trey katlai. So you are liable for two deaths. Chadad lav malka ana, v'kakarisli malka. Number one, I'm not a king, you're calling me a king. But two, and furthermore, if I was a king, why don't you come to me? Why don't you come until now? So if you say that I'm not a king, Ibra the Malka. So if you say that I'm not a king, Ibra Malka at, I think you are. The La Malka at the Lo Mimsir Yerushalayim. You are a king, you will be a king, because if you're not a king, Yerushalayim will not be given over to you. Dichsiv, because the Pasuk says, so you understand, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is darshaning a pasuk to explain to the king, to explain to Vespasian why he's going to be king. Okay, so he says, and he says, "Tichsiv al vanon badir yipol, vein adir lamelech," and he said, "Vein levlon beis hamikdash." Okay, but what does this indicate? So, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai believes Yerushalayim will be given over to a king. So, since Vespasian is coming, so he must be a king. So what does Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai believe? That destruction is inevitable. Now why? Now what's his proof? What's his proof?
He doesn't have one.
Or okay, so.
He sees the situation.
What?
He's going to be the king this
weekend. Right. Right, it's a problem. It's sort of like right. So in other words, either he surmises the situation, or he sees the destruction. You know, he sees the destruction. What's going on? You know, he's confident. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he's coming to the king, he's confident that Yerushalayim is going to fall, which relates to another famous question, which is his requests, right? Because he seems confident. He's saying, Yerushalayim is going to fall. You're going to conquer Yerushalayim. And then he says, and your question of, if I'm the king, why didn't you come until now? The Biryonim didn't allow me. Okay? So, then what does the king say? What does Vespasian say? He's not the king yet. Ilu chavis shel dvash v'derekon kruch aleh lo yushavir nasa chavis bishvil derekon. He said, I understand. If there was a barrel of honey and a snake was wrapped around the honey, now who's the snake? No, no. Who's the Biryonim by the snake? Now, if the snake and what's the barrel of honey? Yerushalayim. Right. So if you have Yerushalayim, which is the barrel of honey, and you have the snake, which is the Biryonim wrapped around it, wouldn't you break the barrel in order to kill the snake? And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai did not have an answer. Korala Rav Yosef, Itam Rav Akiva, Meshiv Chacham Ocher V'datam Yiskol. So Rabbi, either Rav Yosef or Rav Akiva says that Hashem basically is part of God's plan to make the leaders foolish. Ibar Le Lameimar Le Sheklina Tzivsa V'Sheklina Le L'Derakom V'Katlina Le V'Chavisa Shekvikna Le. What could you have done? You have simply removed the snake. Right? So that's the question. Was Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai foolish? Is there another argument to say that he wasn't foolish? Maybe Rabbi Akiva didn't agree with him. Right? So maybe Rabbi Akiva didn't agree. Okay, so he apparently doesn't want to. Why else might you not respond to the king? Why are you not going to counter what the king says? King makes an argument against you. King makes an argument, and then you respond to the king. Why you think the king's wrong? Why might you not want to argue against a king?
He called insolence when he didn't show up earlier, so it might be insolence when he answered him also.
Right, so as it could be. So the question really is, when Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai seemingly could make an easy response, right? Now there's the Biryonim are surrounding, you got two different groups. You have the Biryonim, you have the moderates. And the Biryonim, the snake, is surrounding this jar of honey, the Sefer Yerushalayim. So simply, take some prongs or whatever and remove the snake, remove the Biryonim, will help you defeat the Biryonim. But he doesn't say that. Is he not saying that because he's afraid, God planned in his head that he couldn't say, that he didn't want to say it? Or maybe he's afraid of contradicting the king. In any case, meanwhile, yeah? Oh, you say he doesn't want to...
He's here because of a deal with the Biryonim.
Well, no, with one of them.
With the head of the
Biryonim. But he met him in private. He said, if the other people know about me, they're going to kill me. So I don't...
Right, but if he said, okay, I'm going to... It's
his deal. Right. Maybe he's going to kill him. So he'd rather whole Yerushalayim destroy rather... Okay, it's it. Okay. I hear it. Okay. Rather than for sure. No, but so
if he gives up the rebel, the Biryonim, right. He says these are the Biryonim, then he knows for sure they're going to be killed.
Right. I think it seems like he doesn't, could he devise a plan and say, you know what, the city is really divided? He doesn't sort of say that. He accepts as a foregone conclusion that there's no hope for the city. So again, is it because he doesn't want to respond? He's not thinking clearly. So ad hochi asi priskta alemi Rome. And meanwhile, so there is a messenger from Rome comes. Amarle cum demisle Caesar. So arise because Caesar has died. And va'amri hanu chashiv de Rome la osiv v'resha. Okay, he said you're going to be the next emperor. They have a whole story with this shoe doesn't fit. Okay, so then and Rabbi his shoe he wants to take off one shoe and talks about. The shoe doesn't fit because when good things happen, your bone becomes fat, and they have a whole story here. But in any way, sort of towards the middle of the next paragraph, he says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tells him how to fix his shoe problems. And he says, "Me'achar dechak mitu kulehai, if you're so smart, Arina mate lo atite lagavai, why don't you come to me?" He asks him again. I'm reluctant, I tell you. I also had what to respond to you. In any case, Amri le, so the king says, now he's the king, Vespasian says to Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Mezal azlinan, I'm going to go to Rome, because I'm not going to be the emperor, Ve'enesh achrina mishadrana, and I'm going to ascend another person to continue besieging the city and wage war against it. Amar, and then, Ela boy minai midi da asanlach, but I will give you, ask something of me and I will give you, right? And this is obviously the big question. At least the version in our Gemara, there are different versions of the story. I'm only working with the Talmud Bavli's version. There are other versions of the story that he actually did ask to save Yerushalayim, but he was not accepted. This, yeah?
Could his whole premise of him being the king is on this, on based on the psukim saying that Yerushalayim is going to fall to
right.
the king.
Right.
So if he's saying that that's true, then he knows that Yerushalayim has to fall.
Right, right.
So, in which case, then there's no point in
the right, right. No, I'm agreeing with you. So I'm agreeing with you. So now there is, according to this version of the story, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai believes that there's no hope for Yerushalayim. And it's not, it may not be that he's a fool. We may have to re-explain this question. That is, why he doesn't make an argument to the king in a way to save Yerushalayim, he sort of believes this is inevitable, it seems. Let's read a little more. So he says, Omar le, ten li yavna v'chachabeha, give me Yavna and its Chachamim. Vishushilta Rabban Gamliel. And the lineage, the dynasty of Rabban Gamliel. Vasvusa de Messiah and later Rabbi Tzadok. And I want you to heal our good friend Rabbi Tzadok. And once again, either Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva says, you know, this is God again. He's causing our leaders to act foolish. But Rabbi Yochanan, Ben Zakkai Savar, Dilma Kule Hailo Avin, maybe he wouldn't do all of this. He wouldn't save Yerushalayim. If I ask Yerushalayim, he'll give me nothing. Maybe I won't even be able to save anything. So again, just to summarize this, you know, when you read the story, why does Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai not easily refute the parable of Vespasian with the snake surrounding the barrel of honey? Why not request to save Yerushalayim? What kind of person is Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? Not sure. I don't know. He was old. He was old. He was older than Rabban Gamliel. But, yeah, I don't know. So how do you view Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Do you view him as a pragmatist, a realist? Right. So he's not a defeatist, a realist, or maybe even a visionary. We'll see. Is he a realist or a visionary? Now, Rabbi Yochanan, just to summarize, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai quotes Psukim that Yerushalayim is going to fall, so he knew that it would fall. Again, it may have reflected an understanding that the Romans are not causing the destruction, but the Jews are by their actions. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai accepts the fact that Yerushalayim is lost, but he needed, his goal right now is not to save Yerushalayim. Is right, is creating a new path for the Jewish people as a visionary. And perhaps, it's interesting, I saw this interesting source in source 7, Chachmas Manoach, where he writes the following. He says, Chalila sheyachziku es Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai l'sochel v'yiku aleha v'datam yisochel. He says it can't be that either Rav Yosef or Rav Akiva would call Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai a fool. Now, there is one way of reading the story, as you have these two different individuals, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the moderate, and Rabbi Akiva is willing to fight to the end, right? He's the one who supports Bar Kokhba, and he really did think Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a fool for not trying to save all Yerushalayim. The Chochmas Manoach says, no, it can't be that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a fool. Ela mechachma gedola midato asa. He did that. He was a wise person. Sheshasak, that he was when he was silent. Even though he could have responded, he could have said, "Take the just remove the baryonim, right? Remove the snake from the barrel." Because of the honor of the king, he didn't want to respond to the king. He didn't want to say, "King, that was a stupid argument. Here's my response." Sometimes you're nervous to respond to a king. If you're too smart for the king doesn't like you. So you have to be subservient to the king. And in fact, it's what? You have to be a diplomat. Kemoshe Mar Bar Vodazara, Benyan Shalom Bar Katia. Those people doing Daf Yomi, the story of Shalom Bar Katia, number part Daf in back, that the man the Zachi Vedasak Lamalka Mashikhol Khalila Kamonya. They threw him, they killed him. So Shalom Bar Katia, well, he was successful in an argument against the king and on a certain matter, and then but the king was embarrassed and they punished him. V'chein b'shar makomos ki agavda. V'al zeh mevi rai min akasuv. Meshiv chachamim ochor v'datim yisachol. That, what does it mean? It means that the chachamim themselves sometimes appear to be foolish, even though they know how to respond. It's not that God did it. It's that sometimes chachamim know when to be silent and when not to respond. Even if they're right, it's not necessarily the best path. So again, he knew he could not contradict the king. He knew, perhaps, and also, when Vespasian asked Rav Yochai ben Zakkai for whatever you want, what did he say before that? What did he say right before that? I'm going to leave, and I'm sending someone instead of me to finish the job. So he couldn't, Yerushalayim was not on the table. Again, you could read the story in a few ways. Either he knew from his interaction with Vespasian that saving Yerushalayim was not on the table, or he knew that he saw the Jewish people, he saw Kamsa bar Kamsa, he saw the division, he saw the internal fighting, he saw that all was lost. You could look at it like that. So if Yochai ben Zakkai had to scale down his request. Again, do a view. You could also, by the way, you know, when the rabbis later on, again, the rabbis of the Gemara are writing the story. So you see, how do we view of Yochanan ben Zakkai? How do we view Yochanan ben Zakkai? I remember, I forgot who wrote the article. I think Rav Henkin wrote this article about, you know, there's another Gemara, which Yochanan ben Zakkai at the end of his life, and he says, I see two paths in front of me. And one's leading to Gan Eden, one's leading to Gehenna. And I don't know which one I'm going to lead to. You think Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, if he's saying, oh my gosh, I'm about to die, and I don't know if I'm going to get in it or not. Like, what hope do we have? So what's he really referring to? So Rav Henkin thinks that maybe he's thinking about it this time, where did he make the right choice or not? You know, there's a way to view of Yochanan ben Zakkai as there was someone who was like him in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. That's Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was also a martyr. Yirmiyahu also did not believe that you should rebel against the Babylonians. And both of them, both Yirmiyahu and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai opposed the war. And they had opponents who tried to stymie them. Both of them secretly met with the leader, right? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai met with the head of the Biryonim, who was his nephew. Yirmiyahu met with who? With Tzidkiyahu. And in both situations, the leader feared the war party and endangered their own lives by conversing with a prominent figure opposed to the war. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai ends up becoming a visionary like Yirmiyahu HaNavi. He foresees the destruction and he leads the Jewish people to a new era. And with that, we need to go down to his request. So I brought here Ravar. Lech Tzid has a take on his request, right? He wants the dynasty of Yochanan ben Zakkai, of Rabbi Gamliel, Yavda, and Rabbi Tzadok. So this is Rabbi Lech Tzid I saw. They said, the concern for Rabbi Tzadok testifies to the importance of the individual in the eyes of Yochanan. He does not minimize or dismiss the suffering of the individual within an entire city that's under siege. So one request is, show the people, you have to worry about the individual. Okay. The second request is somewhere between concern for the individual and concern for the community. Rav Yochanan asks for protection for the dynasty of the Nesi'im, the nation's aristocracy and oligarchy, a symbol of the Israelite monarchy, which is no more. And the third request represents concern for all of Am Yisrael. And Yochanan ben Zakkai chooses Yavne and its sages. His choice astounds us. Why settle for Yavne, relinquishing the real center, Yerushalayim? We may propose two possible answers. One is that while Rav Yochanan himself was able to predict the criticism that would be later directed him for his decision, he felt Yerushalayim would not be given to him. The other possibility is that he perceived Yavne and its sages as being in some way preferable to Yerushalayim. Yavne was a town on the periphery, which at that time was witnessing a boom in Torah scholarship. Yerushalayim was a divided, warring city in which even the Torah was subject to disputes and was tainted with causeless hatred. Interesting. So he says, on the one hand, the individual, the oligarchy, and all of Am Yisrael. Another approach I've seen is that, you know, source 9, the Mishnah Avos says, there are three Ketarim, there are three crowns, Keser Torah, Keser Malchus, and Keser Kahuna. So you got Yavne as Keser Torah, you have Rabbi Gamliel, his dynasty is Kesel Malchus, the Nisim, and Rabbi Tzadok was a Kohen, so it's Kesser Kahuna. Could be. But I happen to think, my take on this, if you read this story as a continuation of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, I think that it's not Kesser Torah, Kesser Malchus, and Kesser Kahuna, which is the new vision. I think that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, first of all, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was older than Rabbi Gamliel, and he understood that the nation's unity for success was critical, and they would unite under Rabbi Gamliel. But I think Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's criteria, his vision for a new era, was Torah, leadership, and extreme empathy. Rabbi Tzadok, the exact opposite of Marta Bas Baitus. Rabbi Tzadok was someone who fasted for 40 years before the Churban. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, obviously, he knew we needed Torah. But you can't just have Torah when you have all this lack of achdus. You know, the kamsas bar kamsas. There was Torah, and society was destroyed. So you also need leadership. You also need leadership. We need the best candidate for leadership is the Shalshelas of Rabbi Gamliel. That's the best candidate for leadership. You need united leadership. But you also need a role model of extreme empathy for the other. Again, you can look at the story of Marta Bas Baitus, the opposite of the three rich people. It's true. But I think even more than that. Marta Bas Baitus is the opposite of Rabbi Tzadok. She did a Maaseh Rav Tzadok at the end of her life. She threw all her gold and silver at the end of her life, but it was too late. And I think as we reflect on these stories, we see that Chazal did not just preserve history. They gave us a mirror. They show for us in this Agadata, in this story of a nation under siege, four distinct responses to a city under siege. The Birionim, who clung to ideological purity and destroyed their own society in pursuit of a misguided war. Marta Bas Baitus, who symbolized moral blindness, so consumed by her own comfort that she was unaware of the suffering around her. These two responses emerged from the climate created by the Kamsa Bar Kamsa Sinas Chinam. Rabbi Tzadok, who bore the pain of the people in his own body, fasting for 40 years to prevent the Churban, is a living symbol of selfless empathy. And of Yochanan ben Zakkai, who saw beyond the present crisis and had the courage to abandon what could not be saved in order to preserve what could, Torah, leadership, and a model of extreme empathy. And I think these are not just ancient responses, they are timeless. Today, too, we are a nation under siege, not only militarily, but morally, politically, and spiritually. And once again, the question is not only what our enemies will do to us, but how will we respond? Will we destroy from within through hatred and extremism? Will we disconnect in apathy and privilege? Or will we rise with empathy, wisdom, and vision to lead our people towards a better future? The Churban teaches us that internal collapse leads to national tragedy, but it also teaches that redemption begins with those who are willing to lead with humility, sacrifice, and love for all of Am Yisrael. If we can embody the spirit of Rabbi Tzadok and the vision of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, then even in times of siege, we can plant the seeds of Geulah.